Hello, and welcome to New World Witchery, the search for American traditional witchcraft. I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane.
If you're looking for a podcast on traditional American folk magic, we hope you'll stay tuned.
In this episode, we won't be having our regular interview segment.
Instead, we're doing a show on magical media mania, which will be discussing books, movies, television shows, and other media formats which have inspired us to be more witchy. Stick around.
Hello, and welcome to our fun show that we're excited about.
We are so excited about this show. We've been talking about it basically since we
had the idea for the podcast, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, since we stopped recording for the last podcast, it's almost been like, when are we doing this podcast? When are we doing this one?
Yeah.
Because this show is all about books, movies, music, TV shows that make us feel witchy.
Right. And aren't necessarily witchy in and of themselves, but make us feel sort of
magical.
Yes. Or you know, take you to that next level kind of thing.
Yeah. They're, you know, if they're not overtly about witchcraft or witchy things, they inspire a certain kind of mood.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, so let's get started.
Yeah, let's get started. Okay, we're starting with books, and we broke these into two categories of nonfiction, like how-to books on witchcraft, and fiction. Now, our nonfiction list, because a lot of people do nonfiction lists, there are a lot of really good recommendations out there. So Lane and I are going to focus more on other areas, but we thought we'd do sort of a combined top five of instructional witchcraft books.
Right.
The first one I have on my list is Hoodoo Urban Root Magic by Catherine Ironwood, which I have recommended many, many times on the blog.
Yeah, that was even our prize for our contest that we held.
It was. I mean, we really, I can't recommend that highly enough.
Right.
It's just a phenomenal book. So yeah, but I think we've kind of gone on and on about that in other places. If you don't have it, check it out. It's worth it.
Yeah. If you're interested in hoodoo at all, that is.
Yeah, yes, if you're interested in hoodoo. It's also, you know, got a couple of just folk magic leanings to it, so it's pretty cool. And herbs, if you're interested in herbs, it's a good book. The next one on my list is The Encyclopedia of 5,000 Spells by Judica Iles.
Love that one.
And you got me hooked on this. Lane has a copy, the original copy of this book, which was the Element Encyclopedia.
Right.
Of 5,000.
It's funny because one of my old boyfriends happened to get it for me. And, you know, he was very supportive of my leanings. And it was for my birthday. He's like, here, I got you this. And I was like, holy crap, because this book is huge and heavy and insane.
I mean, you could carve out the middle of it and use it to store valuables. It's just gigantic.
Exactly. So I remember being really surprised and really excited about it. And I didn't really appreciate it for what it was until maybe a few years later when I really got, like, down to reading it. And I really like it from the history perspective because she actually, you know, includes, you know, really old,
like ancient Egyptian, ancient Greek, ancient Mesopotamian, ancient Sumerian.
Like there are spells in there for how to form a hand of glory.
Yeah, I mean, she has...
that's crazy.
She has, and I know that there's a lot of debate about what's the original receipt of the hand of glory, but she has that. She has the one that I've seen most commonly circulated, plus a couple of variations.
Right. That's another thing. There's a lot of variations on the same spells, which, you know, sometimes people like better than others. So, you know, you can sort of pick and choose which one you like.
Yeah, it's just a marvelous book. It's not academically geared in that it's not giving you a whole lot of information about each culture or each spell that it gets into, but it's incredibly practical.
Well, even just, like, the back...
The formulary.
Yeah. I mean, you could take out... Like, say there are 1,000 pages, you could take out 900, and it would still be the most useful book in my library.
Yeah. The formulary in the back alone has just amazing stuff in it.
Because it tells you how to make goofer dust. It tells you how to make all the inks, like the dove blood ink, the dragon blood ink, isn't that one of them?
Bat's blood.
Yeah, bat's blood.
It's got Florida water. It's got Notre Dame water. It's got several different several different hoodoo condition oil recipes, incenses.
Yeah, it's awesome for that kind of thing. So,
and I mean, there are people who don't like this book, and I can understand that because she throws you just a bunch of spells. It's really all you've got here is a bunch of spells. But my thoughts on it are, in the average spell book that you could buy off the shelf, you're going to have about 100 spells.
Mm-hmm.
If even 10% of this book is worth it for you, that's 500 spells.
Right.
For about the same as you would pay, maybe a little more than you would pay for a normal spell book.
Right.
And I mean, it's just, it's such a good value.
Mm-hmm.
And such a good thing to have.
Definitely.
All right.
So, moving on.
Moving on. The next one on my list is The Red Church by Chris Bilardi. Chris Bilardi is a friend of New World Witchery. And I got to know him through the Crooked Path forum when it was still in existence. And he is writing mostly about powwow or brakari practices, which are the Pennsylvania Dutch healing practices. I love his book because he gives you a complete system for doing healing magic. And then he also gives you all of this extra information that's very, very individualized. Like he has a spell for protecting your car that's very, very specific. And then he has these great correspondences in the back that are all the psalms, which I love. Psalmic magic. I just think it's fun. So it's an excellent book. Check it out. Again, we've recommended that one many times on the blog.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. Next on my list, this is one that may be controversial, may not be controversial, may not be very well known, but there's a book called Witches by Erica Zhang, which is, I love it because the information in it is really interesting. She definitely comes out of that 60s and 70s branch of witchcraft, which was still heavily, very, very heavily Wiccan, and also had a lot of feminist influence. So she has, you know, little bits and bobs in there that I think have been, and I don't want to say disproven, but have had other theories proposed about them since then. But for the artwork alone, like, it is just one of the most beautiful books on witchcraft. It's sometimes it's creepy, sometimes it's gorgeous. She goes through witches' tools in one section, and gives you a lot of tools that I don't see listed in other places all that much. Like the cord or cingulum is not often discussed.
That's true.
But it's
used a lot though.
Yeah, it absolutely is. She gives you, of course, like an athame is a typical tool. Necklaces. She goes through witches' necklaces. Conjure bags. I think at one point she goes through garters. Yeah, garters. She talks about witch clothing versus witch nudity. The other thing I love about it, Erica Zhang was a poet.
Mm-hmm.
So she has a very healthy respect for poetry, and she includes a lot of that in her book. Some of it is her own. Some of it, I think she's got an Anne Sexton poem called Her Kind, which I love. Love, love, love this poem. Oh, I'm going to read just a brief little, the first stanza of it.
Okay.
Which is Her Kind. I have gone out a possessed witch, haunting the black air, braver at night, dreaming evil. I have done my hitch over the plain houses, light by light, lonely thing, 12-fingered, out of mind. A woman like that is not a woman quite. I have been her kind. And like, just love that kind of stuff.
That is a good poem.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. So, yeah. So, I recommend that book very highly. Might be a little hard to find anymore, but if you can, it's worth it. And then the last one on my list is Nigel Jackson's Call of the Horned Piper, which is a thin, tiny little paperback volume. Gives you so much information on traditional witchcraft. Not American traditional witchcraft, I'll go ahead and say that. it's definitely British, but it's something that I use a lot to sort of help me structure my practice, and I love that.
Something else we want to mention, it's sort of like a runner-up.
Yes.
And it may be a little bit, I don't want to say controversial, that's the wrong word, just, you know, a little bit.
But people will be reaching for the dials after we say it, I can tell you.
You know, Scott Cunningham.
Scott Cunningham.
I love him. He is his books were some of the very first that I read. They've really influenced my practice for a very long time, and there's still something comforting about reading Earth, Air, Fire, and Water.
Absolutely. And I'll say, especially his folk magic books.
Yes.
Earth, Power, and Earth, Air, Fire, and Water.
Yeah.
I still find myself flipping back through those.
Yeah, and even Living Wicca is pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, for Wiccans.
Yeah, you would have a hard time finding a better 101 book for people than that book,
I
think.
Yeah, definitely. So
definitely we recommend Scott Cunningham, especially to people new to a witchcraft path, particularly a witchcraft path that would lean more towards Wicca. That I would say, you know, if somebody comes to me and says, I'm getting interested in this, I definitely want to know more about, you know, God and goddess worship, and mm-hmm. less, and they're not as interested in the folk magic aspect of things, I probably would turn them on to the solitary practitioner.
Right.
The more interested in folk magic, I might send them to Earth, Air, Fire, and Water.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we've talked about weather magic, and, you know, reading that book was a lot of what influenced that, so. Mm-hmm.
I know, yeah, it was, and, oh man, I just remember going through that book. And like, everything he would talk about, I'm like, I can just go out in the backyard and get that.
Right.
And being like, that's awesome. That's magic I have at
exactly.
hand.
Exactly.
I loved it. Loved it. So I know people out there are not always huge fans of his. And I can understand that there's some definite criticism that can be levied against him.
Mm-hmm.
But for the time that he was writing and his intentions and his purposes, he did an excellent job, in my opinion.
Me too.
All right.
So, okay.
All right.
So let's move on to the really fun stuff, the fiction.
All right. So, Lane?
Yes?
What books, what fiction, what stories make you feel all witchy?
Well, it's funny. When I was thinking of my list, one that jumped out at me that I had never thought about being witchy before, and this is actually because when we were out exploring in the woods near your house, you know, we were talking about hedge crossing and stuff like that, and it kind of occurred to me that this book was a bit of a hedge crossing, and that's Bridge of Terabithia. And
yes.
I have to say, I'm a huge young adult fiction fan. That's pretty much all my favorite books are young adult fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Bridge of Terabithia, you know, was a huge book for me when I was younger. You know, these two sort of outcast children band together and cross a river, and they can't do it any old way. They actually have to swing over.
On a rope, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that plays into the story. Pretty heavily.
Yeah, it does. If you haven't read it, I won't spoil it, but it does. And so that, you know, they swing over and then they become kings and queens, or a king and a queen in their own land, you know, land of their making. Mm-hmm. And they rule and
have battles against monsters and things like
and,
that.
And, you know, I definitely am not trying to say that the author wrote this with that in mind, but I think it's just, you know, you can pull little, like, witchy things from anything.
Right. It's definitely one of those things that, you know, Joseph Campbell would have said holds that world mythology in it.
Right. Exactly.
And it does a beautiful job of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are things about that book I still think about. Like, mm-hmm. I love her family, when the kids are assigned a homework assignment in school where they have mm-hmm. to watch some television program on, like, public access.
Right.
And she's like, I'm sorry, I don't have a television in my house.
Right. And everybody's like,
and it's this big shock. Like, is it, what? You don't have a television? Where's your tail and horns? You know, it's just, it's so beautiful.
Yeah. That
book.
Such a good book.
Good choice.
So what about you? What's your number five?
Number five on my fiction. I don't know if I'm cheating by doing this or not, but I included a lot of folklore collections in my fiction.
I don't think that's cheating.
Okay.
I think it's something that a lot of people overlook.
Yeah.
And they don't give credence to because we read it to children.
Yeah. Well, yeah, my thing is, like, the reason I think it's cheating is because, you know, yours has Bridge to Terabithia, which is a single contained story.
Right.
And if I have a folklore collection, I'm like, I have 17,000 stories to choose from. So it's kind of cheating like that. But the number five on my list is Ozark Magic by Vance Randolph. Another one that we've
discussed that, yeah.
Yeah, we've definitely played that up quite a bit on the blog. But if, you know, if you haven't seen it, this is the first you're hearing of it, it is one of the most influential books on modern folk magic. If you look in the bibliography of almost any folk magic book published today, you're going to find a reference to this book. It has been sort of this touchstone piece, and I just love it. It's got a lot of really good information, a lot of really good lore. Randolph was an excellent folklorist,
mm-hmm.
and just found so much information in the people he talked to. So a lot of good magic in there if you're willing to do a little bit of digging, not even all that much.
Right.
It's right there. All right, what about number four for you?
This one is another not necessarily witchy, but, like, the themes come off very magical to me. And that's It by Stephen King. I'm a huge King fan. Huge. I read It. It's, like, what, 1,100 pages when I was around 14. I checked it out from the library, and I could not put it down. And I mean that literally. I did not shower. I did not eat for 4 days until I finished this book.
Like, you were very popular.
I really was, especially in middle school. Luckily, I think this is over the summer, so I didn't have school distracting me, but I just...
Stupid school.
Stupid school.
Trying to burn it down and flood it and
exactly.
Do whatever we have to do.
I love this book so much. And a lot of people, like, they cite this book or this movie as what, you know, their fear of clowns came from, which I totally understand. But if you read the whole thing and you really get into the themes of the novel, oh, here comes my English major out. But it, you know, it's not just about fear or overcoming that fear or about, you know, these kids fighting a clown alien monster. It's
in typical Stephen King fashion.
Of course, because it is King. But, you know, it's really about these, you know, these children, and they come to fight this monster, but they can fight it because they believe in a certain type of magic, and they believe that they can fight it, and then they have, you know, they don't actually kill it, so they have to come back as adults and finish the job. And it's really about, as adults, rediscovering that magic and that ability to believe.
Mm-hmm. It's tapping that imagination.
Exactly. It's I always feel so sad whenever I finish the book, like at the very end, because it's almost like it just makes you think of being a kid and that in between stage, like that twilight stage of your life, or no, twilight's the wrong word. I guess dawn would be a better description, because yeah. You know, you're going from child to adult, and you know, you still feel like a child in some ways, but you're starting to understand things. And I could talk for the whole podcast about it, especially because it's such a long book, but I'll leave it at that. And it's the first King book I ever read. It's one of the first adult novels I ever read. So it always holds a special place for me. Mm. So,
yeah. And I'll go ahead and say, I'm not a King fan. Mm-hmm. I've tried, I mean, really tried to be a Stephen King fan. I've had so many people, and not Lane, actually. Lane has not tried to foist any Stephen King on me, because she is a good person.
Well, I realize that King is not for everybody.
Yeah.
The thing that I really like about him is he's such a character-driven author, mm-hmm. you know, and I love that. I love character development.
His characters and his ability to build suspense, I think, mm-hmm. are just lovely. They're really good.
Mm-hmm.
My problem is always at the end of the road, it's a giant rat monster. Or it's a giant spider alien clown. You know, and I'm like, I'm just waiting for that to come out of the woodwork and be like, well, yeah, no, you're right. I didn't see that coming, because it's completely ludicrous. But to be fair, if I'm being really honest, he is a master of suspense.
Yes.
I give him that.
It
it's just not
is
my
scary
thing.
As shit. I just rhymed. Seriously, that book scared the crap out of me when I first read it. I mean, it was good for that other parts, but like, I could not like shower properly for weeks because I was so scared of the drain. I'd have to like back away from it, you know, like duck my head under the shower and then back away towards the wall and wash really fast.
Wash your hair, little girl.
Pennywise, no. My little brother is still scared of that movie.
Oh,
poor little thing.
Fair enough. The movie is pretty creepy. So.
Well, Tim Curry is awesome.
Mm-hmm. That's just a generally true statement.
Yes.
I love that man.
But anyway, okay, so what's your fourth book?
Fourth book is The Silver Bullet by Hubert J. Davis. I've been blogging a good bit about this recently. It is just a collection of American witch stories. That's all it is.
Interesting.
Flat out. Some of the most interesting stuff
I've never heard of it.
I will have to pass it your way if you're interested. It's amazing. He just does this amazing job of organizing these stories, which are mostly from the East Coast, Midwest, and South. He doesn't get a lot of Western, you know, west of the Mississippi stuff, but everything else he kind of gets in this book. And he does this great job of collecting these witch stories into basically three categories, which are how one becomes a witch, what witches do, and how to battle with wicked witches.
Hmm.
And it's really interesting, and it's, you know, at first it sounds like, oh, it's just silly, but he has very legitimate information. The initiation ceremonies are ones that I find in other locations.
Oh, so they're like scarily accurate type of stuff?
They are.
Yeah.
Very scarily accurate. He talks about, you know, witch bottles, and he talks about using witch balls. Not the glass ones, but the little ones that you spit at people to cast a curse.
Interesting.
Very interesting stuff. Very interesting stuff.
I'll have to look at that.
I just love that book. And somebody, I think on the Crooked Path Forum, put me onto it, said, hey, you should check this out. And I tracked down a used library copy of it to purchase, like, on Amazon, because it's not in print anymore.
Right.
And just devoured it in a day, and have reread it a couple of times since.
Wow.
Just love it. Love it, love it, love it.
So, yeah. Check that out.
Yeah. All right. And number three from Lane.
This is kind of an obvious one, but I will stand by my decision. Harry Potter. I freaking love the series, and it's, you know, it's not just about, like, silly...
Aloha Mora!
Right. You know, Wingardium Leviosa type stuff. You know, it's...
It's not all just butchered Latin and...
Right.
And Scooby-Doo.
And, you know, well, the thing I love about Rowling is everything pays off in the end. She has so much stuff that, you know, she brings in, and you're always like, oh, you know, that's no big deal, but then it just... It is a big deal in the end, and it's such a payoff. I love it. And, you know, and she does have some really good messages in her book that I'm not going to go into because most everybody has read Harry Potter. I don't need to. Mm-hmm. But,
and with her, for me, I do actually really like the Harry Potter series. I take the opposite tack with her that I do with King, mm-hmm. which is that, she is not a master of style. There's no real subtlety to her.
Right.
It's all very laid out for you, but she is a master storyteller, and her characters are just enjoyable as could be.
Yes. It's funny, in King's book, his nonfiction On Writing, and he talks about how adverbs are pretty much like the bane of mm-hmm. most authors' existence.
And then...
But then he says, but sometimes it's really effective, and, you know, but I think what he's getting at is that you have to know the rules before you can break them. Mm-hmm. And he brings up Rowling and how she uses so many adverbs. Mm-hmm. Like, every... There's a qualifier on everyone's, you know, she said adamantly, or she said huffily, or whatever, you know, like, that tends to be a no-no. But he says, her books are so good that you overlook it, and it actually does help instead of hurt, so.
Right, and the thing is, she's still very economical with her right. language.
Right.
So no matter how many adverbs she's using, the fact that you're just getting, she said this huffily, tells you a lot about that character and mm-hmm. about that situation, as opposed to if she were like, she said it huffily and then angrily strode off to be alone right. in her beastly dormitory or right. whatever. You know, she doesn't drag it on. She's very, very precise, mm-hmm. and I can dig that.
Yeah. What about you?
Number three. This one is Fairy and Folk Tales of the Irish Peasantry by William Butler Yeats. The version I have, it also has a section by Lady Gregory, who was, they were both involved in the Irish nationalist movement. The reason I love this particular collection of stories, yes, I do have Irish roots, so there's something to that. I love a lot of the stories because they have a lot of, like, things about fairy doctoring, which is very, very close to the cunning folk of mm-hmm. England. So there's a lot of stuff sort of hidden in it, witchy-wise. But I find that the more I read of Appalachian folklore, and the more I read of this book, the more I see that they are so intimately connected.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, and that's not just like conjecture. That's true.
Yeah.
That's been proven.
Yeah, there's one story called, I think, James and the Red Caps in Yeats' book, which has an exact parallel in a story called Greasy Witches, which comes out of the Appalachians.
Interesting.
Almost the exact same story. And it just makes me feel really, really connected to mm-hmm. all that lore.
Yeah.
To have that. So I love it. I think it's fantastic.
And our loyal listeners know how much we love to feel connected to.
Yes. Yes.
That sort of thing.
And it's obviously, it's all fantasy and everything. We live in this fantasy world, so.
Of course.
It's who we are. What about you? What's number two for you?
Number two is... A little bit controversial around these parts because Corey hates bunnies.
We have to dive out the window.
Yes.
Stupid rabbits.
He hates bunnies, but okay, it's Watership Down. I love this novel. Watership Down was given to me when I was, let's say, 9 or 10, and I was at the YMCA day camp every day, and there was this one counselor. Her name was Courtney. I will never forget her. She was just so sweet and so, just, you know, such a good person. And she knew I loved to read, and, you know, everybody else there did not. And so, you know, she said, here's this book. I really like it. You know, it was the first adult novel that I read. And it was, oh, it will always stay with me. It was probably my most favorite novel. Corey, however, saw the traumatic animated version of the 70s, was it?
The 70s or early 80s. Yeah. I think the book may not even have come out until like 81, honestly.
Let me look.
But at any rate, it's an older, I think, Rankin and Bass animation. And the thing about it is not a light and sweet and fluffy book about rabbits. It's a very dark book in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it is.
Well, some brutal stuff.
The thing I love about the book, though, that sort of that makes it on my witchy list, is that Richard Adams, injects the rabbit's mythology into the book along with the story. And by the way, to answer your question, it was published in 1972.
Oh, way out there.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, they have their own stories and their own hero and god and god counterpart, kind of. It's not the devil.
Like a trickster figure?
Well, I'm talking about the black rabbit.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. First of all, he also has their own language, which I'm sorry to say that I know most of.
the way some people know Elvish from Tolkien.
Exactly.
You know Lapine.
Yes. It's sad. But Frith is their god, and Frith stands for the sun.
Which, if you know your, I think it's Norse or Germanic mythology, that probably stands out for you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, you know, Frith created the world in their story. El Afrera is their trickster god, or a folk hero, sort of. He's not really a god. I guess he's not like a Jesus equivalent. He's just sort of the father of their race.
He's like Legba. I mean, he's like Papa Legba in Voodoo.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
this crossroads trickster, can help you, but he yeah. could also be a little bit of a problem sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, really
exactly.
interesting.
And so Frith's little, or not little, Frith's counterpart is the Black Rabbit of Inlay, and Inlay is the moon. But it also has this a second meaning of darkness, fear, and death.
Sort of the underworld.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, one of the stories that the rabbit tells, El Afrera goes into the underworld to protect his people, to ask the Black Rabbit of Inlay to take his life and spare the life of his people. You know, the Black Rabbit won't bargain with him, but they do play a game, like a traditional rabbit game. Anyway, you know, I guess that's enough about Watership Town. It's just...
Yeah, and I absolutely actually respect this book. My mom was a gifted students education teacher, and one of the things she taught was this book, which is why we saw the movie at such a young age.
Gotcha. And why you're scarred for life.
And why I'm scarred for life, and any kind of rabbit that looks even vaguely creepy just sends chills down my spine. And I know I'm going to get tons of emails in my inbox now with creepy rabbit pictures. Oh, why do I say those things?
Please anyway. Don't do this to Corey. Send the rabbit pictures to me. I love rabbits.
Yes. Yes. They're just going to get forwarded to her anyway. So.
Anyway.
Anyway, yes. So when that was taught to us, there definitely is that. Yeah, it's this almost big mythology side of it that is just amazing.
Yeah. Well, he creates the world of the rabbits so well. Like, it's just good in it, just a fiction sense. Like, the book is just amazing. And so, yeah.
It's amazing.
Check that out. And creepy.
Rabbits. Yeah. What's with all the carrots? Why do they need such good eyesight for?
We'll get into that later. For those of you who caught that.
That will come back around.
Anyway. So, what's your fourth book?
My number two from the top is... That's fourth and last. So number two is really obvious, Grimm's Fairy Tales. Just straight up love it. I think it was originally Grimm's household and fairy tales, or household and folk tales. I don't know what could be said about this that hasn't been said a thousand times over, but if you're looking for some really good stories with some really good witchcraft floating around in them, that's a place to go to.
Yeah,
they're just good.
The originals, not the...
Yes. Find an unabridged version. So, I mean, there are some versions of them that are edited, but are still pretty good. But if you can find the unedited versions, just go for those. They're great.
Mm-hmm.
So good. All right. So, number one on your list.
Okay. It is The Secret Garden. And some people are like, oh, okay, another kid's book. Well, I have read this book probably about as many times as I am old. And
interesting. It's almost an annual thing.
Huh? Yeah, definitely. I haven't read it this year, but I'm sure I will at some point.
It's spring. It's the appropriate time to pick it up.
Exactly. The thing that a lot of people don't realize about this book is that it is so magical. There's spells in it. They talk about spells. Like, here, yeah. I've marked a few places to read from. And I have to say, the movie version, the one...
I think it's an Alfonso Cuarón directed...
No.
Is it not Cuarón who is
no, directed he did, it? No,
He did The Little Princess.
Which Frances Hodgson Burnett wrote as well.
Right. So there's a connection there.
Right. So also a good book, but not necessarily witchy.
And he directed the third Harry Potter movie, so there's a connection there, too.
I wonder about you, Alfonso. Okay, so, you know, Colin's talking about...
Colin being...
The sickly cousin of Mary.
Who's the protagonist of the book.
Right. He says, "Of course there must be lots of magic in the world," he said wisely one day. "But people don't know what it's like or how to make it. Perhaps the beginning is just to say nice things are going to happen until you make them happen. I'm going to try and experiment."
Right. So, like, right there he's like, yeah. There's magic in the world. This is how you do it.
Mary first hears about magic because she lives in India to begin with. You know, this is obviously, you know, colonial times. You know, she kind of brings it back with her. And then she meets Dickon, who is
her maid.
Yeah. It's Martha. And then Martha's brother is Dickon. And Dickon, you know, kind of lives out on the moor and he speaks to animals, which is a huge theme.
Not like, you know, "Hello, how are you, little squirrel?" But like, he can talk to a squirrel and it knows what he's talking about.
Right. Or, and like, you know, he can call animals and, you know, animals come to him. So, let's see, they talk about spells and they want to, Colin keeps wanting to experiment with, you know, since he's been sick his whole life, he wants to be stronger and really try to walk and just be a healthy kid pretty much. So he's saying to Mary for their spell, "Then I will chant," he said. And he began, looking like a strange boy spirit. "The sun is shining. The sun is shining. That is the magic. The flowers are growing. The roots are stirring. That is the magic. Being alive is the magic. Being strong is the magic. The magic is in me. The magic is in me." And I would like to point out that magic is capitalized throughout this book for the most part.
Every occurrence of it pretty much is
capitalized. Yeah, there may be one or two. It's more like when Mary's thinking or talking about it, it's capitalized. And if you watch the movie, they do a spell on that as well to call his father home. You know, they're around a fire dancing and chanting and, you know, calling spirits. And it's just...
The whole book is just amazingly witchy. The fact that they have to find a hidden key to get into a secret garden through a hedge.
Yeah, well, okay. Let's just go through all that first. Okay, Mary comes, she is sour, she's just a pissy kind of person, you know, she's pissed off all the time.
She's a spoiled little brat.
Yeah, she's ugly and sallow, and they make her, you know, leave the house because they're afraid of her finding out about Colin, you know, so they don't want them interacting. Well, so she goes out, and then a robin comes to her, you know, nature, like, pulls her in, and shows her where the key is buried, because she's heard these stories.
And let me just point out, a robin is the one who leads her to the secret, like Robin Goodfellow.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, it's lovely. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, there's so many little connections. I love it. And it's funny that they change it because in the movie, she finds it in the house, in a in a drawer. That's not what happens in the book. She actually finds it in the earth and pulls it out. That pretty much is what kickstarted my key fascination as a child. But, so anyway, it's like you said, you know, she has to actually search for the door and find it. You know, unlocks it and goes through the hedge because it's so overgrown. And it's just this kind of dead-looking world. But she brings Dickon in and asks him, is it alive? And he knows, because he's such a, like, a nature person, he knows it will grow. And he helps her, you know, dig out the bad weeds and plant all this stuff and really helps her grow. And she says at one point in the book, you know, being outside has really helped me grow and be a better person, and I'm not sallow anymore, I'm not sour, and it's just, I just love that book so much.
It is. She got me to read this book shortly after we started working together magically.
Yeah.
And ever since then, I've just been absolutely convinced that this book is a repository of phenomenal amounts of magical information from the turn of the
Well, you did a little bit of research on Frances Hodgson Burnett, yes, right?
Yes, and she was a member of Helena Blavatsky's Theosophy Society, which has a lot to do with spiritualism and mm-hmm. mediumship and magic, basically.
Yeah.
So there is a definite real connection between the two.
Right, it wasn't just her, you know, making shit up.
Right, it's not just her doing a children's story that has some magical elements like a fairy tale in it, which already is pretty witchy to me, but she probably very much intended for this to have magic in it.
Right.
So, I highly respect that.
So, what about you? What's number one for you?
All right, my number one is, I don't really know how to introduce it other than to just say it's American Gods by Neil Gaiman. Also, I've heard Gaiman.
I'm pretty sure it's Gaiman.
Gaiman, Neil Gaiman.
I love.
If you don't know who he is, check him out. He is just the most magical writer alive, yeah. I think.
The thing I love about him, and I know I've said this to you before, so I'm sorry for repeating it to you, but the listeners have not heard me say this. I really feel like he can just tap into something primordial in all of us.
Yeah.
Like, to me, all his books are sort of like he found them, like, written in stone somewhere in some deep recess in the earth, and he is bringing it to us. And it's just like this collective story that we should know, but we don't. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to describe it any better than that. Yeah.
He's unearthed these stories rather than written them.
Exactly.
And I mean, some of them, I mean, you've got Coraline, which mm-hmm. is another brilliant children's story, very, very witchy.
Right.
To the point where, like, she's at one point dousing for water.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy. And then he does the Sandman comics, which mm-hmm. are very, very magical.
Mm-hmm.
Insofar as they even have an Aleister Crowley figure in.
Yeah.
But what I love about American Gods, the basic story of American Gods is that all of the gods from the old world,
mm-hmm.
you know, of Africa and Europe, Asia and some, I don't know if he gets into Asia a whole lot, but all of those old gods still exist.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been diminished. They've come over to the new world with the immigrants that arrived on these shores and sort of had to set up residence. But they didn't have nearly as many followers here. They didn't have nearly as much pull, as much sway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Christianity certainly has, you know, most of the country under its sway. So they've all had to sort of fit into society.
Right.
And they've all, you know, like Odin, who's a major character in the book, has taken on the name Wednesday because Wednesday is Odin's day. So he goes by that.
Right.
There's a springtime goddess who goes by the name Easter. I think Anansi is floating around in there mm-hmm. as well. And, you know, and, like, there's these Slavic gods, Chernabog and some others that they're just living in, like, a slum apartment in New York and, like, just trying to make do as best they can.
Uh-huh.
And it's really, really beautiful. And this guy named Shadow, who's an ex-con, gets recruited by Wednesday, Odin, to help him sort of revitalize the gods, more or less. And they go on this big cross-country adventure, have lots of other little stuff that goes on, and just has this beautiful way of looking at, you know, how mythology in the American landscape,
mm-hmm.
you know, how it's been shaped, how it could possibly exist. And it really does make me look for gods everywhere.
Right.
And I love
that. It's very relevant to what we do.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, for lack of a better term, it's not fluffy. It's just not a fluffy book at all.
No.
I'm going to read a short little passage that actually kind of illustrates that in a fun way, I think. And this may get Rotten Tomatoes thrown at us, but I stand by my decision
okay.
to read this. This is a scene where Wednesday and Easter and Shadow, the human character Shadow, are all in San Francisco, and they go to a coffee shop, and Wednesday decides to, you know, ask people sort of if they know what Easter means, if they know where Easter comes from. He says to Easter, "Serious question, my dear. Certainly I would agree that millions upon millions of them, humans, give each other tokens in your name, and that they still practice all the rites of your festival, even down to the hunting for hidden eggs, but how many of them know who you are? Excuse me, miss," this to their waitress. She said, "You need another espresso?" "No, my dear, I was just wondering if you could solve a little argument we were having over here. My friend and I were disagreeing over what the word Easter means. Would you happen to know?" The girl stared at him as if green toads had begun to push their way between his lips. Then she said, "I don't know about any of that Christian stuff. I'm a pagan." The woman behind the The woman behind the counter said, I think it's like Latin or something for Christ is risen, maybe? Really, said Wednesday. Yeah, sure, said the woman. Easter, just like the sun rises in the east, you know. The risen sun, of course, a most logical supposition. The woman smiled and returned to her coffee grinder. Wednesday looked up at their waitress. I think I shall have another espresso, if you don't mind. And tell me, as a pagan, who do you worship? Worship? That's right, I imagine you must have a pretty wide open field. So to whom do you set up your household altar? To whom do you bow down? To whom do you pray at dawn and dusk? Her lips described several shapes without saying anything before she said, The female principle, it's an empowerment thing, you know? Indeed. And this female principle of yours, does she have a name? She's the goddess within us all, said the girl with the eyebrow ring, color rising to her cheek. She doesn't need a name. Ah, said Wednesday, with a wide monkey grin. So do you have mighty bacchanals in her honor? Do you drink blood wine under the full moon while scarlet candles burn in silver candle holders? Do you step naked into the sea foam, chanting ecstatically to your nameless goddess while the waves lick at your legs, lapping your thighs like the tongues of a thousand leopards? You're making fun of me, she said. I just love that passage. Because it just makes a really interesting point that, you know, if these gods are wandering around in America and somebody, you know, says, oh, you know, I worship the old gods. And they're like, oh, really? Who do you? And maybe I know that one. Maybe right. I know who you're talking about.
Right. You're maybe like, I am that one.
Exactly. And you're like, just, you know, in general, all of, you know, just the principle. You know, if a god heard that, they'd probably be like, I'm sorry, what?
That's great.
So I love that take that he has mm-hmm. on them, where he really makes them very real. Very real gods. And it makes me look for gods everywhere. You know, if I see a homeless person, I tend to think, you know, oh, that could be a god in some guise that is testing me.
Right.
You know? I just don't know.
Right. That's true.
So I think it's a really interesting way of doing that.
Right.
Anyway, so we have rambled on for quite a while. This is, I think, going to be a heck of a long show.
Yeah,
I hope
that
you'll
just books.
Forgive us.
Yeah, definitely. Please stick around.
Yeah, that's just books. We've still got music, movies, TV to go. I promise those are going to be shorter because there's only one list for each of those categories. But right now we're going to take a quick break. Mm-hmm. We have been very lucky. The awesome band Tricky Pixie, which is this just phenomenal pagan band that I love. They're actually, I'll talk about them a little bit more on my list.
Mm-hmm.
But they have agreed to allow us to play a few of their songs on the podcast. So if you haven't heard of them, I think you're in for a real treat. If you have, you already know you're in for a real treat. So what I think I'm going to play for you now is off of their album Myth Grants, and the song is Tam Lin. So enjoy, and we'll see you on the other side.
Time lives. Janet holds her petticoats well above her dirty knee, and she's gone to her father's hall just as fast as she can hide. All the ladies of the court at their plate and red as rose, except for Janet fainting fast. Green as growing grass she goes, up and speaks her father dear, doting, caring, meek and mild. Janet, darling, daughter mine, I fear you go with child. Father, if I be with child, be sure myself shall bear the blame. There's not a knight within your hall shall get the baby's name. Father, if I be with child, 'twill prove a wondrous birth. For well, I swear it's not the gate of any mortal man or nurse. When near 9 months are gone, and she's away to Cardhome to speak with young Tamlin, but young Tamlin will not be found. And Janet's in despair, to the forest floor she falls, and swift her lover catches her. Janet asks Tamlin, my love, why is it in these woods you hide?
The queen of fairies stole me, hence alas, when I was but a child. Mildness, I was a skillful man, and hunting he loved well, but I was prey for the fairy queen. When from my horse I fell, ever since in yon green hill, queen I'm bound to dwell, I'd never tire of living there, for the land of fairy does me well. But at the end of 7 years, the queen doth pay a tithe to her, I so fair and full of flesh, and fear 'twill be my
self. But how shall I thee ken, Tamlin? Or how shall I thee know among a troop of fairy knights, the like I never saw?
First let pass the horses black, and then let pass the brown. Run ye to the milk-white steed, and pull that rider down. They will change me in your arms into a deadly adder, but hold me fast and fear me not, I am the baby's father. They will change me in your arms into a bear or lion bold, but hold me fast and fear me not, I am the father of your child. At last they'll change me in your arms into a naked knight, then cast your mantle over me and keep me out of sight.
Did high the heavens dressed in baleful black, and all was silent as the grave, but Janet waited in the dark, her own true Janet stood with mind unmoved, the gloomy heat, the bone, and louder, louder rang the bells as the fairy court came riding on, and first rode by the night black steeds, and then went by the brown. Then up she ran to the charge of pain, and pulled her lover down. They changed him in her arms to all the beasts and flames and hateful things, but she did all that her lover bade, and young Tamlin she won. Up and spoke the fairy queen, an angry queen was she. Woe betide the wretch whose tale, the best knight of our company. Had I but known Tamlin, she said, what defeat this night I'd see, I'd have stolen both thine eyes and changed thee fast into a tree. Had I but known Tamlin, she said, before we left this night to roam, I'd have ate thy heart of flesh and left thee with a heart of stone. I forbid ye maidens all who let fly your lovely hair to go down to Carter Hall, for young Tamlin is there. Janet tied her kirtle green above her knee and not below, and she's on to Carter Hall as fast as love can go.
All right, we're back. I hope you enjoyed the Tricky Pixie. I love them. We'll get into it in a second. We'll discuss them more. But anyway, so now we're going to talk a little bit about music.
Yes.
And do you want to start again, 5 to 1?
Sure.
All right.
I think a number 5 would be a perfect circle. I'm not trying to say they're very witchy. It's just their music, especially the album Marie and Gnome. Did I pronounce that?
I didn't take French.
I didn't either. I'm bad at it. But anyway, it just sort of has that elevated consciousness for me. And I think a lot of it is like the emotions I associate with it. My husband really loves them and Tool. And, I just listened to it a lot. Like when we first started to get to know each other. I mean, we weren't even dating. This is when I was dating his friend.
Well, that worked out well.
Yeah, exactly. So, I like them for that. And we actually have a song, Magdalena, by them, which is, I'm not going to say it's like witchy necessarily, but it kind of has like a little bit of a theme.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of like a...
You look up the lyrics.
An atmospheric, darker atmospheric vibe.
Yeah.
So, anywho, we're going to play a little clip from that.
Yeah.
So, here goes. So,
that's
Magdalena.
That's perfect circle. All right, what about you?
Mine are in no real particular order.
Mine aren't either. Don't worry.
So this is really not a 5-to-1 list. I'm just going to throw some out there. I'm going to start with Tricky Pixie, because we just played that song by them.
Okay.
I love this band. I'm not Dr. Brendan Myers from Standing Stone Garden Gate. they've been doing something on their show recently where they were going through some of their favorite music. And one of the things he pointed out is he's just not a fan of a lot of pagan music.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exciting for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally echo that. And, you know, it's just most music, pagan music out there, I have a hard time listening to and getting excited. Not that I dislike it so much as it doesn't make me feel anything. It doesn't make me feel witchy.
Right.
It's just music.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, this Tricky Pixie album, I happened to go to an S.J. Tucker show, S.J. Tucker being one of the singers in Tricky Pixie. I happened to go to her show because I like a few of her songs as well. And I just fell in love with this music.
Mm-hmm.
It's got this weird gypsy vibe to it. It's really old school in some ways. I just love it. There's a couple songs on there that don't quite fit that mold. But overall, just really, really love it.
Cool.
Yeah. The version of Tamlin you just heard, it's a traditional song, but it's beautifully arranged, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then another big thing is, and you'll hear this in another one of my recommendations, I am a sucker for a cello.
Yeah.
Throw a cello into something, I'm like, sold, witchy as can be for me.
Yeah.
And their cellist, Betsy Tinney, to me sounds a lot like somebody else on my list, who I'll get to in a minute, but just love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Awesome.
Right. Next for you?
Let's talk about Dar Williams.
Oh.
I love her.
Amber called her uncle, said we're up here for the...
I love that song so much. I listen to it every Christmas/solstice. Yeah. Yeah. So, my friend Amy first introduced me to that song, and, yeah, so anyway, not much more to say about that. She's so great and fun and upbeat and...
Yeah, she's very personable, too. Mm-hmm. I went to go see her when she came through town.
Cool.
At one point, and she, after the show, went outside and just stood and waited and let fans come up and shake her hands and get autographs.
Wow.
And everything. No, like, entourage or anything, just her.
Awesome.
Yeah. Very nice, very nice person.
I like that.
Yep, I dig her. And some of her other songs, actually, are fairly, not witchy, necessarily, but they definitely have a pagan-y.
Lord, there's one that makes me bawl my freaking eyes
out.
She has
like 20 that do that to me.
This one is When I Was a Boy. Oh my god. I'm gonna start crying talking about it. We gotta move on. If you wanna cry your eyes out, then go listen to When I Was a Boy by Dar Williams.
Yeah. It's lovely. It's a lovely song.
Oh my god.
She's just got a lot of good stuff going on.
Yeah.
All right. Along the line of loving cello, one of my favorite things to put on if I want to get into kind of an otherworldly mood is Zoe Keating, who I discovered through another podcast, which has nothing to do with magic. In fact, it probably, if the hosts of it ever heard this podcast, they would just point and laugh. The show is called Radiolab.
Uh-huh.
It's all science. It's just a very science-based podcast. But they did this really interesting show on the War of the Worlds and the psychological phenomenon surrounding that radio broadcast. But they did a live broadcast of it. And Zoe Keating did the cello music for it. And Zoe Keating is really interesting because she takes one cello and she has an electronic setup around her. And she'll start with one thing of cello music, kick her little loop on, and it holds that loop. And then she'll add something else to it. And she creates these beautiful layers of nothing but cello that sometimes don't sound anything like a cello. Actually, let me play a little clip right now. You'll hear that. That is just the business. I just love that. I just really love that sound. She also happened to be the cellist for Rasputina for a while.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. How witchy can you get?
I love that one song that was on the Buffy soundtrack.
I don't know which song that is, actually.
Transylvanian Concubine.
Yes, 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 yes. I don't know if she was the cellist on that, but she's been with them, and they're very witchy.
Yeah, so. Love that song. So anyway, okay.
They're great. All right, next.
Thrice. They have a series of albums called The Alchemy Index, and there's volumes 1 and 2, is Water and Fire. And each album is, like, the music is based around this element. And all the song titles are sort of, you know, indicative of the element that they're talking about. And,
like, Fire has titles like Backdraft.
Right, and... exactly. And Earth has Moving Mountains, Digging My Own Grave, Child of Dust. And I prefer Earth. Like, that is my favorite. I mean, the music isn't, like... in my opinion, isn't like, whoa, that's so amazing. Like, I want to listen to that all the time. But it's, I think it honestly would be great for like a background music. Like if you were doing like a working with a particular element or something that you needed help with a particular element, and you know, to help like to play this, I think it would really help put you in the right state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see it being great for like a certain type of ritual working.
Yeah. Those are definitely fun albums, especially as kind of a background music
right.
phenomenon. All right. Next on my list, we briefly touched on this woman / band, but Fleetwood Mac.
Yay!
And I specifically choose the album The Dance, which is their live comeback album from like 1998 or 1999, maybe year 2000,
mm-hmm.
Which just has some of the best versions of their songs I've ever seen. Stevie Nicks is in like full on witch mode,
yeah.
like big, you know, stomping boots and
yes.
long black dress and shawl. And if you watch the video for
oh my God.
Silver Springs,
you tell me about this.
Where she's like, she's singing to her ex-boyfriend, Lindsey Buckingham, who's playing guitar, and like, they're staring each other down as she's singing. She's like, and you will never get away, never get away, never get away. She's pointing at him and like glaring at him and her head shaking. And you're just like, okay, that's a curse. Yeah, he's not going to walk straight for a week or something. Like, she just, oh man, it's just beautifully witchy.
And oh you my have, God.
You know, you have that song.
Well, wait, didn't Lindsey cheat on her with their
with
fellow
Christine.
Bandmate Christine McVie, right?
The whole band just seemed to be in this uproar.
Weird,
of,
like, incestual yeah,
people,
thing.
Yeah, people, ugh. It was the 70s, people
yeah,
were on drugs.
That's true.
You know, which doesn't make it any better, but... But yeah, so anyway, so there's all this conflict in the band, but they make this music.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Oh.
Landslide is an amazing song.
Landslide. I mean, anything that Stevie Nicks is singing on, you've got a pretty good chance of,
that's
of
true.
Feeling witchy with.
Edge of 17.
Edge of 17. Just like a white window. Sing a song, says how she's singing. Singing.
Ooh,
baby.
Ooh.
Baby. All right. Yeah, so
anyway.
Fleetwood Mac, The Dance. Enjoy it. It's
we
good.
Love Fleetwood Mac, obviously. Thank you, Mom. She is a big Fleetwood Mac fan. That's why I love him. Goodness.
What's next on your list?
These are just sort of ones that I kind of included to fill out my list. Like, they don't really make me feel witchy necessarily, but more like a, more towards the hippie side of me.
Mm-hmm.
And,
makes
so,
you feel like a child of nature.
Exactly. So that, the next one would be San Francisco by Scott McKenzie.
If you're blind,
that was terrible.
Yeah, I apologize to Scott McKenzie and anyone listening, actually.
But, you know, I've always loved that song. It's just a good hippie song, you know. Mm-hmm. Be sure to wear some flowers in your hair. Okay, I will if I ever go to San Francisco.
Just don't go into that espresso shop and deal with that waitress.
That, yeah, yeah, that too.
In the book. The thing that we talked about earlier. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So, what about you? What's next for you?
Next for me, I'm having a hard time deciding which one I want to end with here.
Okay.
But I think I'm going to just go ahead and say number 4 for me would be The Decemberists, The Hazard of Love album.
Mm-hmm.
Or Hazards of Love album. Okay, this is an album that came out last year or the year before. And the album is a rock opera. There wouldn't half the audience right there. It's a rock opera by this band that uses these incredibly diverse sets of instruments, and the band itself is already really good at doing storytelling songs.
Mm-hmm.
Every song I ever hear from them just makes, it gives me a complete mental picture, and I love that. This album is a complete fairy tale. The entire thing is this dark fairy tale about a woman who goes to the woods and finds this injured fawn, and as she's trying to treat it, it transforms into a man, and they make love, and she gets pregnant.
Oh, my.
And she has to flee from her home, where she's like a king's daughter, and she goes to live with the fawn man, but it turns out that the fawn man is was adopted by this queen of the forest, who is very jealous and doesn't want him to have anyone but her.
Wow.
And like,
that's a lot to get from a song.
Well, it's not one song. It's a whole album. Oh, okay. The whole album. So you got this jealous queen, and then this other character comes in called, his name is the Rake.
Mm-hmm.
And like he was married at one time, but his wife died after giving birth to 3 kids. And, you know, he was fine with having a wife because that meant all the sex he could get, but children, he wants to be settled with this. So he systematically kills them.
Oh,
like I think some of the lines are something like, Charlotte, died when I fed her foxglove. Daisy was easily drowned in the bath. I can't remember the Colin, I think was the boy's name. Colin, fought, but was easily bested, and I burned his body for incurring my wrath.
Oh my God.
Very dark.
That's horrifying.
Very dark. So, but he, you know, he's on the lookout for a new wife,
mm-hmm.
a new plaything. And so the queen and he make an arrangement that he'll get to steal the fawn man's, girl.
Mm-hmm.
But then the fawn man's like, the fawn man goes to her rescue, and it's, you know, it doesn't necessarily end with like a lot of like, oh, so hooray, everyone's happy.
Right.
But it definitely has this amazing fairy tale quality. I'm going to play a little clip from it. This is, the main character, who is the man who turns back and forth into a fawn. Dealing with the queen of the forest, and he's begging her to allow him to have one night with his true love. And after that, he foolishly makes a promise that after that night, he'll be back with the queen forever. And so she agrees to the deal, and it's real dark and real, like, scary, but I'll love it.
Okay.
So here you go. Let's hear that. So anyway, yeah, that's the Decemberists. Check them out.
Okay.
It's totally great.
Cool.
All right. What's your last musical?
All You Need Is Love. The Beatles.
All right. Yeah.
I love them. I love the Beatles. I love the song. It's just, it's that kind of hippie crunchy type of song. Mm-hmm. It just makes you feel like a flower child, but I love it, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's a great song, though. I mean,
yeah.
It definitely would put you in a good mood.
Yeah. I love watching the video of it, like the...
Mm-hmm, the live.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, Mick Jagger's in the audience, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
And I love the other Beatles songs that are interspersed, like, throughout the end.
Yeah, aren't there, like, 11 other songs?
Lord, I don't know about that many. I know at one point, you know, you hear...
She loves you, yeah.
At the end, yeah. And then you hear Yesterday.
Uh-huh, like, a little bit of Hey Bulldog, I think, is in there.
Yeah. So, anyway...
Yeah.
I love that song.
Cool song.
Yeah.
Cool song. All right, last thing on my list. My father was a composer and taught classical music, and so I grew up around a lot of that. And additionally, this was also going to tie slightly into one of my movie choices.
Uh-huh.
But Modest Mussorgsky's Night on Bald Mountain, which is just amazing. The whole thing is basically a Walpurgis Nacht.
Mm-hmm.
Which is Sabbath. That's the entire, that's the theme of peace.
Right.
And it's this like, da 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 da. And I just love that intensity and mm-hmm. love that build and the, you know, the sort of minor, I think it's minor, I'm not even going to pretend I know if it's a minor key or not, but it's just, It's just a stellar little bit of music to have.
Do you have a clip for that?
Yes. I'm going to play just a little bit of that. So I'm going to play you a little bit of Mussorgsky, and then after that we'll be getting into TV.
Okay.
All right. See you on the other side.
Hopefully you enjoyed that, and now we're on to TV, which I'm excited to talk about, because I get to talk about X-Files!
Oh, no! Okay. All right.
So I guess we'll start with that.
All right.
I freaking love X-Files. I have a huge crush on David Duchovny, and Gillian Anderson.
All right. They're both sexy. Awesome. Sexy admission from Lane. And inappropriate. Both sexy people.
So, what I really love about The X-Files is that, you know, of course, a lot of it is completely silly.
Tell me I'm crazy.
Mulder, you're crazy.
And especially, like, when you look at the first season and Scully is wearing those horrible...
Oh, the shoulder pads. Yes, the one where, like, she has to walk sideways through doors half the time. Oh, my gosh.
She looks like a freaking linebacker.
I know.
And it's this awful plaid and, anyway.
I'm glad they figured out costuming by the third season.
Yeah, me too. But there's just so many great little pieces of, like, mythology that they take. And, you know, of course they make a whole story about it. And they sensationalize it like any TV show would do or any movie. But there's little bits of truth that you sort of, you can go, oh, okay, I wonder what that is. And research more about it and learn more about it. And I think, you know, it can help with just your general knowledge of mythology, which I think always helps in witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, no, I definitely remember seeing a few episodes. There was one that was where they were dealing with a witch, and, like, she was holding something above a candle flame, and, like, her eyes got all black, mm-hmm. and it was very, very intense, and I was like, that was interesting.
Yes!
But she was
that episode's creepy.
Yeah, but it was almost like she was like a holy roller witch. Like, she was connected to some, like, very rural church or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I may be kind of misremembering that, but it's...
I think you are, because I know the one you're talking about, and that's when there are these group of teachers, and they worship this god, and, you know, you're
mm-hmm.
there's all these satanic rituals going on, and mm-hmm. you know, everybody's kind of hysterical, but anyway.
But it's still pretty interesting.
Yeah, so that's the only reason I include it, because there's little tidbits that I think can be useful, and absolutely. It's just fun.
Yeah, and it was definitely a good series at the time. I tried rewatching the first season. Like a month or two ago,
mm-hmm.
and I gotta say, I wish I had started at the third or fourth season, because that first season, ooh, it's rough.
Yeah, it is.
It's real rough. It's got some good moments, and, like, the actors are doing their best.
Yeah,
but they just did not have a budget yet. So bless them.
Yeah.
Bless Vancouver for looking always like it did.
Bless their hearts.
Yes. Yes. So all of our friends in Vancouver, thank you for giving us X-Files. Anyway.
So, what about you? What's your first TV show?
Okay, I'm going to start here. This is a fairly generic one. I actually wound up knocking something off my list just a little bit ago, because I remembered this, and I was like, you know what? That really does have a place on my list.
Okay.
Bewitched.
Aw.
Yes, exactly. Her mother, Endora,
mm-hmm.
which I only recently realized Endora, the Witch of Endor in the Bible. I mean, it's... So, they weren't just being completely silly. They
right.
had some thought that went into it. But it just really makes me happy to be a witch, because it's a very positive portrayal of witches.
It is. That's funny, especially in that time.
Mm-hmm. Like, Darren comes off looking like more of a jerk most of the time,
yeah.
because he doesn't want her to use magic.
Right.
When it's like, no, let her use magic to wash the dishes, please.
Yeah.
That woman is raising a child. Are you crazy? So, I mean, I just really like that show. All right, what's number
we won't
four?
Talk about the abomination of the movie, though.
I did not see it. I intentionally avoided that.
Yeah, that I only saw like part of it. But anyway.
Like a hurricane of crap. I just did not want to get caught in the shitstorm.
Okay, so next is pretty much falls under the exact same thing as X-Files. It's Supernatural, which is actually still going. Mm-hmm. I will confess an undying love for Supernatural. But it's funny because this is even more relevant than X-Files because they actually do go into, like, more of the, you know, the myths. And it's really American, you know, type stuff.
There's a lot of hoodoo.
There's a ton of crossroad work. They call crossroad demons. And now it's getting more like, biblical, like angels versus demons. And, you know, like, it's not as interesting to me. But the first three seasons are pretty awesome for that. And, like, at one point they talked about goofer dust, and I was like, holy crap. And I, you know, I explained to my husband what goofer dust was, because we watched it together, and he was just like, oh, okay. And, let's see, at one part they talk, like, I think it's in the first season, there's a Wendigo, which is like a Native American type thing. There's shapeshifters and ghosts, and there's mostly demons. Like, at one point they battle the seven deadly sins. You know, like personified.
Isn't Lilith a major character?
Yes, Lilith is a major character, which got me kind of interested in wondering what she was about. So that was pretty cool. And
so definitely has some witchy stuff going on.
Yeah, definitely. But it's the hoodoo that really gets me, because right? I just think it's interesting that that a show like on the CW, I think it's on, is talking about it. When most people aren't talking about it right now.
Well, yes, yes and no, because I think we're going to get into another one of your choices, which also brings it up on a major network.
That is very true. Okay, so yeah, we'll wait for that. But anyway, okay, Supernatural, check it out.
Now, mine, I just realized looking at mine, not a single one of them is current. All of them are off the air right now. So clearly I'm living in the past. But this one is a fairly recent choice. It's one that I loved. Loved. But it got canceled. I don't really know why.
Who knows?
But Pushing Daisies.
Okay.
If you've seen this show, you know how wonderful it is. It's magic. It's just.
I haven't. I thought it was about something else.
It's about a guy who has the ability to bring people back from the dead with a single touch. But if he touches them again, they die forever.
Right.
And so he sort of accidentally brings back his schoolboy crush after she is mysteriously murdered. The reason that he brings them back now is he works with the private detective who solves murder cases, and so he can actually ask the people who died, how did you die?
Oh.
And so, as soon, you know, they tell him, then he puts them back down, and then the private detective solves the case and collects the reward, and they split the reward. And then this the main guy is a pie baker. He owns a pie shop. So that's how he supplements his income from a pie shop.
Hmm.
And the reason he can do the pie shop is because he only buys spoiled ingredients. Because he can touch them and they come back to life.
Oh.
So he touches them once, puts on gloves, and then can make pies.
That's cool.
It's really beautiful. So he brings back his girlfriend, and they can never touch, but they fall in love.
Oh.
So there's this whole thing of if he ever touches her, she dies.
Oh, that's
even awful. Accidentally touches her, she's going to die.
Yeah, that's like Rogue times 10.
I mean, it's, that was.
Sorry, that was a really dorky reference.
Got a geek flag flying there, honey. But yeah, I mean, it's just this beautiful show. It's very magical. Actually, one of the main actresses, Kristen Chenoweth, won an Emmy for it after the show had been canceled.
It is that good that it
got recognition critically, but for some reason ABC has a hard time getting behind magic, apparently.
We'll
get into that in a minute on another show, but for a company that's owned by Disney, you'd think they'd give it a little more of a shot. I don't know. All right, what's number three for you?
True Blood.
I want to do bad things with you.
We actually have a clip of the opening theme song.
Yeah.
So we're going to play that before we start talking about it. And every shadow filled up with doubt. I don't know who you think you are, but before the night is through, I want to do bad things with you. So True Blood is set in the world where vampires have come out of the closet, so to speak, and they're living among humans. If you haven't seen it, it's on HBO. And
it's because the Japanese developed some sort of synthetic blood that they can drink without feasting on humans.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's why they decided to come out. Suki is a waitress who can read minds, and she's the protagonist, and it's interesting because she can't read vampires, so of course they're very interesting to her. And I've actually read the books that these are based on, and those are pretty good too. They're, you know, I like them better than the show. They're awesomely smutty, and
that's always fun.
They're basically just vampire romance novels, which I love. There's actually the latest one is in my purse right now.
They're vamporn.
Yeah, pretty much. So, but anyway, the thing about True Blood is in the books, there's a ton more magic than there is in the
show.
Yeah, like. In the books, there's a, you know, there's witches eventually, and there's
hoodoo folks too.
Yes. Well, and that's the thing about the show. Tara, who is Sookie's friend, goes, her and her mother go to see this hoodoo conjure woman. And, you know, she does this thing to take the demon out of Tara's mother. And, it's interesting how they approach it though, because turns out it's fake.
Mm-hmm.
Like she had put, a little bit of snake poison, whatever it was, with Epicac.
Mm-hmm.
So she would hallucinate and then throw up.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought that was, like, the demon coming out of her.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not approached in as much of a serious manner on, like, even on Supernatural treats it more serious than True Blood does.
Mm-hmm. But it is interesting that, I mean, they clearly say this is a part of that culture.
Right. Exactly.
So... I think that's
yeah, because it is set in the bayou.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying is I think that there is sort of an interest out there in it.
Mm-hmm.
But
at least there's more of an awareness now of it.
Yeah, that people don't just hear hoodoo and go, oh, hoodoo, voodoo. It's all that you know, it's all the same thing.
Right.
People sort of see a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's cool. All right. Next on my list is another canceled series from ABC. Which just got canceled this year, and it is Eastwick.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go ahead and give you a spoiler now. I don't have Witches of Eastwick on my witchy movie list. I love that movie. I think it's very good. I just rewatched it recently.
I have not seen it.
And I got to say, Jack Nicholson as the devil, just that's the role he was born to play. Cher is actually amazingly good. Well, Cher's actually not a bad actress. I can't say anything against her.
No.
And Susan Sarandon is very good in it. I mean, it's just a solid little film,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't make my witchy movie list. The show, however, does, because the show had all the time in the world to do what the movie had to fit into about 2 hours.
Right.
And it was doing a really good job of sort of opening up these women and what they could do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of it was very natural powers and some of it was something that they had to learn. I mean, it was very interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really liked that. And I liked some of the twists that they made from the movie to... And then the movie, of course, is based on a book
mm-hmm.
that I also didn't include in my book recommendations because I've not read the book. but yeah, it's an interesting series. It's got some real neat, magical stuff in it. It's cheesy, too.
Yeah, I stopped watching after the first 4 or 5 episodes. I couldn't get in, stay with it anymore. It was too something.
It's Lifetime. It's a Lifetime series.
Yeah,
that's where it needs to be. And I think that's actually the problem, is that it was a Lifetime series it's a series that belongs on Lifetime that was on ABC.
Right.
And unfortunately, I don't think Lifetime realizes that it needs to pick up that show. because it would do great on Lifetime.
Right.
I mean, it's woman empowerment in a lot of ways, and there's magic, and it's a lot of fun. But it is cheesy. It's very cheesy, very soap operatic in a lot of ways.
Yeah, so just keep that in mind if you want to rent it or something.
Yeah. All right, what's your 4?
I actually don't have one. I only have one left, and we share our top number one. Oh, so you go ahead yeah. and do your next.
Okay. Well, really quickly, I'm just going to say this is sort of a dual component. Back in the, I think, 80s, maybe early 90s, Jim Henson Studios produced a series called The Storyteller.
Mm, it's on the Netflix Instant Queue right now.
I have it on my Instant Queue, and I've been rewatching it ravenously. I love that series. And then there's another series. It's not related at all, but it's very similar mm-hmm. in some ways, called Shelley Duvall's Fairy Tale Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically these fairly big-name stars. You have, I think Eric Idle is one of them. You know, fairly big-name stars doing retellings of fairy tales
mm-hmm.
and stories. And so these great old fairy tales, need, of course, know what a sucker I am for those.
Right.
Already. And then, I mean, one of the storyteller series, they did an entire season of nothing but Greek myths.
Cool.
So, I mean, they've just got all these really, really great stories done in these really, really fun ways. Some of it's cheesy. The effects are not today's standards.
Of course. Those 2 decades ago.
Yes. But at the same time, some of the effects are actually better than stuff I see mm-hmm. now, because Jim Henson Studios is a really good studio. And
yeah.
So anyway, yeah, a lot of really good stuff.
Cool. So if you have Netflix, check it out.
Yeah, totally. Totally check it out. All right.
Okay. So number one.
I think everyone out there is either totally expecting this or is going to be...
rolling their eyes at us.
Rolling their eyes and being like, I'm never listening to those two crazy people again. But let's be real.
Okay.
The best witchy show on TV ever was Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I love you, Buffy.
I love you, Willow.
Yeah, I love Willow. Holy crap. Okay, this is going to sound so cheesy, but I'm going to confess because it shows my love for Buffy. In high school, my, like, 5 group of friends, we all watched it a lot together. And, like, it's not like we called each other by Buffy names or anything, but we all felt like a kinship with a certain character.
It was like you took a personality test kind of a thing.
Kind of, yeah.
Each one of you fit a role.
Exactly. So... like, I was totally Willow.
There are forces at work here. Dark, incomprehensible forces.
It was awesome.
That's not a surprise to me at all.
No.
Although, as far as I know, you're not a lesbian.
No.
Although you do have a crush on Gillian Anderson.
Hmm.
Hmm. She's a redhead, too.
Men like sports. Men watch the action movie. They eat of the beef and enjoy to look at the bosoms.
But I have to say, I own the whole series. My husband got it for me for Christmas last year, and it was awesome.
And you loaned them to me and yes. got me promptly hooked.
Yes, I got Corey hooked. It was awesome.
Oh my gosh.
You know, it's cheesy, especially the first couple of seasons.
Yeah, the first season and a half are cheese.
Sarah Michelle Gellar, her acting sometimes just...
yeah. She doesn't bother me nearly as much on rewatching. I sadly am admitting this. It's on Instant Queue on Netflix now, so I'm rewatching it again. She doesn't bother me all that much. Her first 2 episodes that she does. But...
Some days she does me, some days she doesn't. It's just, it depends on, I guess, on how I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's just some of her expressions sometimes leave a lot to be desired. But anyway, for the most part, overall, the show
yeah.
is just, it has so much heart. It has so much funny stuff.
I'm aware that there's a great deal of demonic activity in Cleveland.
We have actually a couple of clips that we'll play.
Yeah, maybe interspersing them actually upon editing, so... so they may just be, we may already have played one.
Oh, know it. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Or they may just randomly be popping up as we're talking. If that's the case and it annoys you, I apologize. But, yeah, it's our show.
Oh, well, it's Buffy.
And we love our Buffy.
Arg.
But yeah, it's just, I mean, and some of the stuff they get into is actually, you know, if not like 100% legitimate, it gives you a sort of like, oh, that might be an interesting area to study.
Right. Well, I think it's really funny that in the second season with Miss Calendar, you get
Techno-Pagans.
The Techno-Pagans.
It's actually the first season.
Is it? Oh, that is so cheesy. And that just makes me roll my eyes. Like, it sprains my eye-rolly muscle. Mm-hmm. But it's still interesting because it addresses that emergence of, you know, witchcraft on the internet and how we
yes.
interact right now, because, you know, how are you getting this podcast? You're on the internet. We're talking about witchcraft right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not holding circles online like Miss Calendar says she does or whatever, but...
we're not.
Right.
But there are plenty of folks who do.
Exactly.
There's a whole Second Life coven situation going on, which, I mean, I'm not knocking that. I mean, I don't know anything about it, so I can't say anything. But, I mean, I know that exists, and I think it's an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah. So, anyway, if nothing else, it's cool from, like, a historical point of view.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do remember, you know, that was, looking back on it, I remember, you know, when I first started getting into a lot of the real paganism and studying about it was about the time the internet was blowing up.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there was definitely this community that started up. Right, you know, you would go to the news groups, and this you'd have these quote unquote techno pagans.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, that's how they interacted.
Right.
So interesting.
Maybe that's TV.
Yeah, TV. Yeah. Buffy, man, we love it.
Yeah. You want to move on to movies?
Yes, we're going to play another quick little song here, mm-hmm. and this is from Tricky Pixie. This is the Mushroom Song. It's all nice and spooky ooky. So.
Okay, so we'll see you on the other side.
Enjoy.
sleep of the earth, of the land of fairy deep, is the lore of Canuck-na-shi. Hail be to they of the forest gentry, veiled of spirits, help us free. White is the dust of the state of dreaming, light is the mixture to make one still. Dark is the powder of death's redeeming, or but that one pinch can kill. Sleep of the earth, of the sleep land of fairy deep, is the lore of Canuck-na-shi. Hail be today of the forest gentry, veiled of spirits, of our spirit. White is the dust of the state of the dreaming, light is the mixture to make one stitch. Dark is the powder of death's redeeming, but that one pinch can kill. Sleep of the earth, of the lands of fairy.
Movies.
Welcome back, movies. This is the final segment. If you're stuck with us this long, I hope that you're
entertained
and haven't driven into a ditch somewhere to avoid listening to us any further.
Okay, movies is kind of what I'm most excited about, honestly. Like, there's something about witchy movies that I love.
I know, they're just so fun.
Okay, so my number five would be Practical Magic.
I just love that movie.
I know you do.
Oh, I love it.
Corey has this movie memorized, I would like to point out.
Oh, Jet, just give it up. Never. Yes, I love it.
And we actually have a clip from Practical Magic.
Yes, we do. This one has to do with what you do at a solstice.
So here it is.
I do not want them dancing naked under the full moon.
No, of course not. The nudity is entirely optional. And you will remember.
Okay.
It is entirely optional.
As you will remember. I love her face when she says that. But anyway.
Yes.
Now, there are a few complaints I have with Practical Magic. It is like three different movies trying to be one movie. It's like a romance, yes. A mystery, it's a supernatural type of thriller kind of thing. It really should have been one, you know, like pared down. Mm-hmm. But what I love about it is the little bits of magic that you get throughout it. Like, I love their big... Just,
house.
Their house is amazing, but that room with the, just their,
herbs.
Yeah, just all the herbs. I can't, there should be
the
like
greenhouse.
A, yeah, thank you. Greenhouse.
I love that greenhouse. I love that house. I just want that house.
Yeah, like the landings up going up the huge staircases. Oh,
it's beautiful. Oh, I love it. I'm getting misty thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I love it. I'll go ahead and tell you that it's not on my list. Not because I don't like it, but because I was trying to make my list different from Lane's.
Right.
So that we could have a little more of a discussion.
Yeah, we pretty much agree on a lot of these.
Yeah, I think there are exactly one movie per each of our lists that the other dislikes.
Right, we're excited to talk about as well.
Yeah, that might be fighting words in just a minute.
Cage fight.
I know.
Okay, so what's your number five?
All right, my number five is sort of a. I'll start with this. Used to be my favorite movie of all time. I just love it, love it, love it. And it is Willow.
Yeah!
yes, Willow. Good. Basically, it was The Hobbit Light.
Mm-hmm.
But it got me so into magic, so into it, that I have nothing but love for it.
Right.
So,
is Willow the one with Jim Curry?
No, that's Legend.
That's Legend of the Eagle. Okay, sorry.
That's where Tom Hanks. I'm sorry, Tom Hanks.
Yeah, sorry, Tom Hanks.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I would never confuse you. Oh, that was a...
We'll cut that.
Oh. No, I need to leave that apology in there. That's a public confession of guilt. I am so sorry, Tom Hanks. No, that has...
Tom Cruise.
Yes.
Yeah.
Xenu Jr. Yes. As Tom Cruise as a unicorn boy.
Yes.
Because that's appropriate. Anyway, moving on. That's not what we're talking
right,
about.
Right, no legend. Moving on.
No. Willow is about a dwarf person. The race is called the Nelwyns.
Mm-hmm.
Who has to save a magical baby from That's an evil right. queen. And he enlists help from several people along the way, including Val Kilmer, who plays the greatest swordsman who ever lived. Very action.
It's been forever since I've seen that movie. I need to rewatch it.
It's great. I've got it. Please borrow it if you like. Cool. It's just so good. I love it. Just fun little tiny bit of trivia thrown out there for the fun of it. There's a two-headed dragon that mm-hmm. shows up in the movie at one point that they have to... It's funny because, like, it's... The dragon is accidentally created by the little sorcerer Willow.
Mm-hmm.
When he tries to blast a troll away, it turns into a giant two-headed dragon. And then all of a sudden, his friend Man Mardigan, Val Kilmer's character, has mm-hmm. to fight the dragon along with the army that's trying to kill them, who's also trying to fight the dragon. So it's this big blah, 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 blah thing going on. But the dragon, it never says it anywhere in the credits or anything, but it's always referred to in any of the... like documentation on the movie uh-huh. as the Eborsisk.
Okay.
Because it was a combination of the names Ebert and Siskel.
Oh my God.
So the two-headed dragon is named after a movie critic.
Hilarious. That is so funny.
And I love that. It just makes me happy.
That's funny.
You are my sun, my moon, my starlit sky. Without you, I dwell in darkness.
So anywho. All right, so what's your number three?
Four.
Four. What's your number four?
The Craft.
Mm.
Now, I know it's silly. I know it's totally, like, ridiculous. It gets really ridiculous towards the end. But I will say that the first two-thirds of the movie, it's just so fun. It's so... It really brings me back to high school. And, like, you know, like, when you're first getting into it and you're exploring it and it's just... Like, you're experiencing results from this magic and mm-hmm. you're like, whoa... This really works, and, just so good.
You know, ever since I was a little girl, I just wanted a jukebox that played nothing but Connie Francis. Who's Connie Francis? Who is Connie Francis?
Honey, shut up and listen.
Oh, my goodness.
It's funny, though. I've listened to the commentary, because, yes, I own this movie, and, it's a man who directed it, and he was saying that it was really more about, like, instead of just, you know, witchcraft. It's about, like, you know, empowerment and female empowerment. And mm-hmm. He said as the girls become more and more powerful, their skirts get shorter throughout the movie.
Yeah, I'm sure that was a
which I always thought was
a
funny
real social commentary.
Yeah. So
there are a lot of people though who you know, I hate to say they came to witchcraft through the craft,
mm-hmm.
but they did. I mean,
well, it's like you and Willow. I mean, it brings it into your.
It sparked your interest.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. Right. I really want to say that. There's nothing wrong with admitting, you know, that the worst witch or teen witch or whatever.
Oh, the worst witch.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with admitting that these movies that may have seemed silly.
Did you just say Teen Witch?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love that movie.
Can't get into that.
Oh my God, the songs, they're so great.
I don't. No, I'm not even going there.
Oh, God. Okay, it's a hilariously bad 80s movie. Please look it up. That's all I'll say about it.
They're doing a remake, apparently.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I'm down for that.
I can't remember who's supposed to be in it, but I think it's somebody that you're not going to like.
Mm.
Like, I think it's somebody that you're just going to be like, arr, and turn into your pirate self. Book it.
But anyway, so The Craft.
Anyway, so The Craft. Yeah, very, very enjoyable
film. Yeah, and they actually did have... A Wiccan high priestess come onto the set and help him out and, mm-hmm. you know, kind of give him pointers. And there's one scene where they're on the beach and they're calling the elements. And the girls, like in interviews, said that part felt very powerful and almost like they were messing with something they shouldn't be because, you know, they didn't really believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
Except Frieze Walk is Wiccan.
She's something. She owned a magic shop in L.A. for a while. Mm-hmm. Actually, one of the biggest magic shops in L.A. for a while. But she sold it.
Really?
Yeah, and I haven't seen anything for sure recently that says she is.
No, so maybe she had a falling out or something.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
But I mean, I think she still has sort of a magical persona.
Gotcha.
She just may not be exclusively Wiccan anymore.
Okay.
But either way, she certainly had a connection to it.
Cool.
It's realistic.
What about you? What's next?
Okay, next one. I sort of split this vote, again going in the Jim Henson direction.
Mm-hmm.
This is The Dark Crystal and Labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
Two movies that I think, if you're looking for something that gives you, you know, fun fantasy entertainment, it's got that. But it also goes through some very, very powerful sort of storytelling journeys.
Yeah.
You know, and Labyrinth, of course, is probably the one people know best.
Yeah, I really like Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Well, the only way out of here is to try one of these doors. One of them leads to the castle at the center of the labyrinth, and the other one leads to...
Bum-bum-bum-bum!
Certain death!
Ooh.
It's great. Yeah. You know, it's this about this girl who has to battle the Goblin King to get her little brother back. It's mm-hmm. straight up out of a fairy tale.
Yeah. Well, and Labyrinth is... I can't even say that word. Labyrinths are pretty magical in themselves, and you know, like if you walk a labyrinth, it's supposed to help you concentrate and meditate, and there's all these like mystical properties that have to do with labyrinths. So.
Yeah, and in traditional witchcraft, there's something called a mazy stone, which is the mm-hmm. hearthstone, which has an engraved labyrinth on it that you follow
yes.
with your finger to put yourself into a trance.
Right.
But it's designed to help you cross into that other world space.
Right. Which she does.
She does. She absolutely does that. And it's fun. It's entertaining. The music's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dark Crystal.
You get David Bowie's package.
You get a lot of David Bowie's package. You get David Bowie's package by airmail, home delivery. I mean.
Ooh. Anyway, sorry.
Lots of stamps. I mean, not even kidding. Anyway. But the fortunate thing is that his package is wildly outshadowed by his hair.
That's very true.
So, anyway, but then also you have Dark Crystal, which is another hero's journey about magical races of beings that mm-hmm. need to be, that they're all separate, but they can be united if this crystal is healed. And it's very, very beautiful. You've got these creatures that are very much like druids. And then you've got these other creatures that are, I don't even know what their parallel is. They're called Skeksis.
Feel the power of the Dark Crystal.
Which are, they're kind of vulture creatures in there.
Yeah, I remember them. It's been a really long time since I've seen that movie.
And I actually recently was listening to, I think it's a This American Life episode, which is another radio show / podcast that mm-hmm. does stories about people's lives in America.
And I love that show, by the way.
It's a great show. Mm-hmm. But one of the things they did was they talked about homeless people, and they interviewed these two guys who had chosen to be homeless.
Mm-hmm.
They had said, you know what, we're tired of corporate life, and so they just went to live on the streets. That's what they chose to do. And, like, they had their, you know, computers and everything with them. Very big, you know, they just were trying to see how far they could go with it. And they said that up to a certain point, you stay pretty sane and pretty normal. But there's a line that you cross, and when you cross that line, you become the... You know, the crazy bag lady with the garbage bags in your shopping cart and muttering to people. And they say when you cross into that territory, you do what's called, you become a skeksi, or you start skeking.
Oh.
And I was like, that's really interesting. Did they get it from Dark Crystal, or is this connected in some other way? So if you know the answer to that, I'd love to hear it.
That's crazy.
But yeah, very, very interesting to me.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's a very magical movie.
Definitely.
Holy mildew, mother
of
monk, strangled and
strangled
to death.
Thrice. Well, it is new, yeah. I'm going to say Snow White.
Oh.
I love the music, first of all. It's just, you know, it's fun. You know, it was Disney's first movie. You know, Walt Disney had it in his head for a really long time that he wanted to do this. It was the first full feature-length animated movie. You know, everybody called it Disney's Folly. They thought it was going to fail. Mm-hmm. And then look how well it's done, you know?
Oh, yeah. And such a positive portrayal of witches, too.
Well, I would argue that it is.
Okay.
I would argue that Snow White is a witch. Just
okay. Fair enough.
Not in name, I guess. Like...
But she can communicate with the animals.
Exactly. It's that theme that we've seen a lot in the other stuff that we've brought up. Mm-hmm. Like in The Secret Garden, you know, Dickens communicates with animals. Mm-hmm. And so does Snow White. And, you know, and not only does she communicate with them, you know, they help her. They help her find a place to live, and mm-hmm. they help her clean, and...
Move room with seven strange little men.
Not sure about
that. I'm sure the animals are real helpful. Yeah, that was great. Put her up at a Hilton.
But anyway, but so not, you don't only get like the sweet little light side of it, like with her, but you also get like the darker side mm-hmm. with...
With the queen.
With the queen, right.
Oh, man, that queen, the queen's lab or the queen's dungeon?
Yes.
Ooh, witchies can possibly be.
Yeah, like she pulls out the spell book and...
The mist that turns into a skull.
Yes.
Oh, and the magic mirror, how can we skip that?
Of course, I can not talk about the mirror. Yeah, yeah.
Love that movie.
She uses wind to fan the spell, and she uses lightning just to mix it, to mix the poison. So, you know, she's using all the elements to...
Gorgeous stuff.
Yeah.
Gorgeous
stuff. And I noticed she mostly speaks in rhyme, which I thought I had never noticed before.
Yeah, I think that was a conscious choice by Disney to keep it fairy tale. All right. So keeping with the Disney vein, this will be our first point of contention.
Yes.
I say Fantasia. Fantasia is, say what you will about it, is amazingly witchy, amazingly pagan.
Here's the thing. It is, and I totally agree with that, but like... As a little girl, like, from my childhood's point of view, I hated that movie. I loathed it. Like, I don't know what it was. Like, I think we actually went and saw it in theaters. Mm-hmm. We left halfway through.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
It was just boring.
Just so boring, yeah. And then you got the whole, that was for the re-release. Excuse me, because I'm not that old. but, like, in the original with the centaurs and the...
Being naked.
Well, now, have you ever seen the...
Like, oh, the African-Americans?
Yes.
They actually, the version that you saw in the re-release, they cut out some of the most offensive stuff.
Yeah, exactly. There's still some offensive stuff in pretty much all Disney.
Yeah,
but...
Well, there's one they've never released called Song of the South because it's so, so racist.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing that when it was, I think, released in theaters, maybe as a re-release.
Sorry.
All right, so anyway.
Offensive stuff, they cut it out.
They cut out the offensive
Song
stuff.
Song of the South.
But, okay, back to Fantasia.
Yes.
Fantasia is incredibly pagan. Yes, you're incredibly magical. You have Sorcerer's Apprentice. Absolutely magical.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the Pastoral Symphony by Beethoven, which is the one that you're talking about with the centaurs.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got Dionysus running around getting drunk in that one.
Right.
Oh, what are some of the others? I know they have the Hours... Dance of the Hours, which is, I think, the hippos and the the hippos and the ostriches, which is not inherently witchy there, but that piece itself, I think, has some strong pagan elements.
Isn't that Tchaikovsky?
That one's no, Tchaikovsky is Nutcracker Suite. That's super witchy or super pagan because you got fairies, you got dancing flowers, dancing mushrooms.
Okay, I'm confusing the segments with the music that it's attached to because I haven't seen it in so very long.
Okay,
but yeah,
and then you've got. Then you've got The Rites of Spring, which that in and of itself is a fairly pagan, I mean, it is, it was a pagan ritual performed on stage when it was first performed. And they do it with dinosaurs in the Disney movie.
Uh-huh.
So it's very, very different in there, but I still like it because dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs, yay!
And then the whole thing ends with my favorite version of Night on Bald Mountain that I've ever heard. And it's the one where you have the big witch's sabbat going on, the Chernabog demon at the top of the mountain unfolding and all the witches gathering to him. And the whole thing ends when dawn breaks and a bell rings at the church at the bottom of the mountain. And Ave Maria starts. But it's this very, very low-key Ave Maria. And I know like that sounds like, oh, but Ave Maria, that doesn't sound... But the way it all works is just beautiful. You have the big... Walpurgis Nacht celebration, May Eve festival.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day you have the coming of light and the coming of new life and Ave Maria, Hail Mary, Hail Mother Earth, starting over on May Day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very beautiful. I just love that. And then Fantasia 2000, when that came out, has some of the most pagan stuff I've ever seen.
Really?
The Firebird Suite by Stravinsky is done as this nature spirit waking up the earth, being attacked by a fire spirit coming out of a volcano, and then a stag comes and breathes life back into her so she can wake the earth back up again.
Oh, interesting.
Super pagan.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I totally love Fantasia.
Cool. Well, that makes me love it a little bit more. Okay, so my number two is, I think we actually have this on both of our lists, or maybe you changed it. Skeleton Key?
I changed that.
Okay. Well, we both love that movie.
Mm.
And we talked about it before in our Hoodoo episode. It's just a great movie. It's a great thriller. It's a great little mystery. But you've also got some great, you know, based in reality, Hoodoo stuff. Yeah, that didn't you say they actually had Catherine Ironwood?
Catherine Ironwood consulted on the film.
Yeah.
So gave at least some guidance on it. Definitely has some real hoodoo stuff going on. A lot of the stuff you see is real hoodoo stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly the ending's a wee bit sensationalized.
Of course.
But it's very, very good.
Yeah. Love it.
All right. That was easy.
Yeah, not much else to say. Great movie. Right. We talked about it before. You know, no big deal.
My number two is Sleepy Hollow.
Yes. Now, you made me watch this, and I had no interest in it, but then you were like, no, really, you have to watch it. And so we did, and I was like, holy shit. There's a ton of stuff in it.
Mm-hmm. And, like, okay, the first time I saw this movie, I hated it.
Really?
Hated it. Couldn't stand it. But my wife likes it a lot.
Because she's a huge Johnny Depp fan.
Huge Johnny Depp fan, generally a pretty big Tim Burton fan.
Right.
And so she loves it, and so I would watch it with her. And I finally realized that the problem I have with the movie is Christina Ricci. And I love Christina Ricci. I had a huge crush on her as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
But in this movie, she was not directed very well. Mm-hmm. So her lines come off really stilted and it's very artificial.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And she does not ever need to be a blonde.
Yes.
That was a bad choice. But if you just hold your thumb up to the screen anytime she's on it and just ignore her, then everything else about that movie is amazing.
Yeah.
It was a headless horseman.
Of course it was. That's why you were here.
No, you must believe me. It was a horseman, a dead one. Headless.
I know.
It's all true.
Well, of course it is. I told you. Everyone told you.
We'll talk about some of the witchy stuff that's in there.
Okay, well, unfortunately, most of the witchy stuff comes through Christina Ricci, but, like, she draws several chalk symbols, which are right out of old, 19th or, 17, 18, 19th century grimoires,
mm-hmm.
To use those for protection against the evil eye and against curses. There's a witch that lives in the woods that tells Johnny Depp's character's future, or, like, how to deal with the headless horseman.
Yeah. Didn't she comes from a tree or something?
Yeah, they find her in it. Well, there's the tree, which is the tree that's the gateway to hell, the world tree going down into the other right. world.
And didn't it bleed a bunch at one point?
Yeah, it bleeds at one point.
Ugh, that was nasty.
Yeah, it was pretty gross.
Obviously, I'm not a Burton fan, but it's still, that movie is very witchy. Oh, so witchy. I did enjoy it
And
for
also
that.
Nice and steampunky. It's got some nice steampunk kind of stuff going on.
Yeah, love that.
So I dig that. But yeah, there's all sorts of little witchy stuff in there. The spell that one of the witches is using to control the horseman is just stunningly like, oh, I could totally see how that might work. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very, very good stuff. And just all sorts of neat stuff going on that I really, really like in that film.
Yeah.
Again, you know, I have to ignore poor Christina Ricci, but otherwise, very, very good movie.
Yes. Okay, so my next one is one where we have contention about... And we're not going to discuss, well, I guess we will discuss the merits of it, but I listed it for the witchy stuff, and that is Pan's Labyrinth. And if you haven't seen that, it's pretty depressing.
It's amazing. I would never say anything against how beautiful it is and how...
Guillermo del Toro is an amazing storyteller.
Yes. And he has hell of an imagination.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Some of the visuals in that... haunt me. They're so good.
Like when she takes the chalk and draws the door.
That's good. That's out of Beetlejuice, so I didn't have quite as much of it. But the frog under the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Love that. The creature at the banquet. In the other world. Love that. And that's a fairy tale thing. Don't eat the food of the other world.
That's right.
Overall.
The fairies. And then she uses mandrake root and milk to help her mother.
Yes. She does magic.
Yeah.
So there's tons of really good stuff in there. I didn't like it because it was very nihilistic to me, very negative.
See, I didn't read it like that, but that's where we come into the point of contention.
Yes.
Which is totally fine.
Yeah, I come out of it going, that's a beautiful movie that I don't really want to watch again. I plan to watch it again at some point because I feel like, you know, everyone else loved it, and my wife and I came away from it going, oh my God, that was awful. not because the visuals or not because the story was bad up to a point, but the last like 30 seconds of the film just killed it for us because the editing and I've read interviews with Del Toro from then saying that he intended the ending to be completely ambiguous,
right?
That it's not supposed to be read one way or the other.
And see, I think it's funny because I read it the one way and you read it the other, and that totally affected how we felt about it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, if you read the ending in a positive light, it's probably a much more inspiring and amazing film. But if you read it with with the negative light that I feel is necessary. The only right way to read it. If you read that, it's so hard to watch.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, you're number one.
All right, my number one is not a film per se. It's okay. A director.
Oh.
Anything by Hayao Miyazaki.
Okay.
I say anything. There's a couple films that I'm not huge fan of. I don't love Castle in the Sky.
Mm-hmm.
But adore Kiki's Delivery Service, which is a movie about a witch.
Right.
Just amazing. Howl's Moving Castle. Again, witches, magic, wizards, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Princess Mononoke, if you are pagan and you have not seen that film, rent it immediately. Because it embodies this pagan spirituality so pitch perfectly, in my opinion. And Spirited Away is the most interesting other world journey. I think it very well may be my number one film of all time.
Interesting.
Just
see, love. This actually is another one we kind of, not disagree on, but just feel differently about.
Well, I don't think you've seen them, though.
No, but okay. I do not enjoy
anime.
Yes. It does nothing for me. I would almost say I hate it. Now, don't get me wrong. I will give them a chance because mm-hmm. you enjoy them so much.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's only fair.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it makes me want to stab my ears and eyes out.
I will say that that's actually kind of fair. Because there is a lot of anime that can get kind of frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
The thing for me is I don't go to his movies and think I'm watching anime. I go to his movies and think I'm watching a Disney film.
Gotcha.
Because they're illustrated in that way. They're not drawn like a Disney film. They're drawn with that Japanese style.
That's part of what I hate about it, though, is the style.
But there's none of that, like, there's a big, you know, exclamation point coming off their heads or anything. It's very realistic.
Okay, good.
Very absolutely straightforward. Nothing sensational or bizarre, but beautiful. Just mystical and deeply moving. If you don't like anime, I would say don't start with Princess Mononoke.
Okay.
Just because it's incredibly Japanese as well.
Okay.
Not that it's anime particularly. It's just, it's very, you know, you've got Japanese monks floating around in there.
So right.
It'll throw you if you see that. But yeah, Kiki's Delivery Service is great. My Neighbor Totoro, if you have small children and you want them to believe in magic, show them this movie.
Aww.
It's about two little girls whose mom is sick in the hospital, and their dad moves them out to the country so they can have a better life, and they see this big tree growing in a forest nearby, and they go to visit it, and there's a little troll that lives in it, and there's a bigger troll that lives in it, there's a huge troll that lives in it. And the trolls make friends with them and, like, help their little garden to grow. It's so freaking cute.
Aww.
Oh, I love it. So cute. Anyway, so the way I always describe these films is I say that if anybody wants to understand my spirituality, I just say watch those films.
Cool.
Because that is my spirituality.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's our movies.
That's it. That's it.
That's our media.
Yeah, I know. This is going to be incredibly long. I think could break the 2-hour mark here.
Yeah.
With all the music and everything in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope y'all have enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't, please feel free to rise and say, never do that again. we would like to really quickly give a couple of quick shout outs to some of the Podkin who have just been stellar.
Yeah. There's a review on,
Inciting a Riot.
Yes. Inciting a Riot. Thank you. That it made my heart pitter pat a little bit. It was so sweet and so mm-hmm. flattering. It was.
Yeah.
It's so strange to read that kind of stuff about yourself, but thank you so much. It was just
Firelight, we love you.
Yeah.
You're just
very awesome.
And I listen to your podcast just love it. Just gobble it up. I'm always checking to see if you've got a new feed up. and on that same note, Velma Nightshade over at Witch's Brouhaha
mm-hmm.
Gave us just the sweetest, most wonderful praise in one of her most recent episodes. Just Velma, thank you so much.
She's reviewed us on iTunes and Podcast Alley, right?
I think so. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. And Firelight reviewed us on Podcast Alley as well. I think he did. I don't know for sure.
Anyway. But
at any rate, I mean, we've just gotten some real love from the Podkin community, and we're so thankful.
Definitely.
This is amazing. People are so supportive in this group.
Yeah. It's been pretty great. It's been a good ride.
So anyway, we just wanted to say thank you for that. And thank you to everyone who's written to us on our blog, written to us on iTunes. We love getting those reviews.
Yeah, even if it's just the little 5-star and you don't write anything, that's great too. That makes us feel good.
Only 5 stars. No, but seriously, we really appreciate all the positive feedback.
Yeah.
It's heartwarming. It makes us feel like what we're doing is worth doing.
Exactly.
So thank you all for that. All right. Well, that's it for this episode. If you want to contact us, you can email us at compassandkey@gmail.com.
Or there is always the blog at newworldwitchery.wordpress.com.
And, yeah, that's it for this show. Again, we hope you enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Just a little silly, fun thing for us to do.
Yeah. Anyway, we should be back in a couple of weeks with our regular podcast. We won't have an interview for this month, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll have our regular segments in our next episode.
Yep.
And we'll see you then.
All right. So thanks for listening.
Be well.
New World Witchery is recorded using GarageBand on Mac. The song you're listening to is Homebound by the artist Jag from Cypress Grove Blues. It can be found on Magnatune.com. Magnatune, your source for PodSafe music. Thanks for listening.
Grr, arg.